You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
All right, Ed Stetzer here. This is another episode and kind of a momentous episode, which we'll talk about in just a bit, of the New Churches podcast. Some of you are aware that I started newchurches.com, I believe, in 1994 or 1995 or so. And back then, we would post, like church bylaws, so people wouldn't have to write their own bylaws. We'd post strategic plans. We would share ideas back in the very simple version of the web. And then it kind of grew, and eventually we had the podcast, so we call it the New Churches Podcast. And then a few years ago, we engaged in a partnership with the Send Network, which I'll talk about in just a minute, serving all different kinds of church planters, but doing so. So I love church plants, and I love church planting, and I love church planters. And I was recently in an episode, I explained I was preaching at this church. I do this thing where I preach at small churches. So I tweeted, you know, if you're a small church. Anyway, so I went to this church, and it was a church plant. I love church plants. But usually I end up in an established church when I say small church, because people put church plants in another category. Anyway, so the pastor gets up and he says, you don't know this, Ed, but I'm going to introduce you with this story. And he says, blank number of years ago, maybe a decade ago, when I was trying to figure out what I was supposed to do. And I was thinking about being involved in new churches. So I Googled new churches podcasts. And he said, he didn't Google the New Churches podcast. He Googled the New Churches podcast. And he found the new church. I mean, the SEO on that's beautiful. You search new church. Anyway. So he said, I downloaded, and it was you and Daniel M. This goes way back. We're super thankful for the partnership with Daniel M. So he downloaded all the podcasts. And then he says, I was on this spiritual journey, not looking for another faith. So I was hiking the Himalayas, and I downloaded all these podcasts to, I guess it was probably an old iTunes thing or whatever. And he said, and while hiking the Himalayas and listening to the New Churches podcast, I decided to plant a church. And that was the church that I got to preach at then. So I'm just thrilled by the impact that we've had. And I'm thankful for, I'm going to just tell people, this is episode 833. I'm not supposed to talk about the episode number, but what do I care? I'll explain why I don't care as much in just a minute. So Trevin Wax is with me today. He's the Vice President of Research and Resource Development at the North American Mission Board, kind of the guy now with a team that sort of shepherds and works with the New Churches podcast. He himself was a missionary to Romania, writes, you know, people have read Trevin's stuff, Gospel Coalition, written lots of books as well. And so let me say to you, welcome to another and what'll be a pivotal transitional episode to the church planting podcast that we call the New Churches Podcast. Trevin, thanks and welcome to the podcast.
I'm glad to be here. And yeah, we are going to be making some changes to the podcast, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But this is bringing... the reason I wanted to be on this one in particular is because we're going to talk about the past and future of church planting. We're going to go back. Ed talked about starting this. I mean, what did you say, 1994? That's been 30 years.
Yeah, the podcast, I think the website, not the podcast, the website, newchurches.com website, which I think where most people go to find. So if you look on the history of like network solutions, I think I registered it in the mid-90s. I think, if I'm wrong, please forgive me, but I think it was like very early on in the time of the web world.
Well, even if the website isn't that old, you've been in these conversations for a long time.
I'm that old. The website's not that old. At least I'm that old.
You are, yeah. And you've got some experience and expertise in church planting, and have been, you know, around the world and around the conversations for a long time in this. So I want us to talk about that, but and we'll talk about the changes coming to the podcast in a little bit. But let's just start by looking back. How has the landscape of church planting evolved over the years? Are there some key trends? Are there shifts that really stand out as you look back?
Well, it's tricky because and part of me is like, you know, I did Leadership Network back when it was a thing, Bob Buford. They actually contracted with me, I put together a team of people, you know, substantial grant. And we actually looked at church planting since the mid 50s. And so, you know, part of the challenge is nobody cares. Well, I mean, I care that, you know, church planting in the before the mid 50s didn't even generally see church planters as its focus, but churches hiving off, you know, so, you know, and then go to the 80s, but it's so long ago. I can just say personally that when Don and I moved to the inner city of Buffalo, New York to plant a church in 1988, plant a church among the urban poor, there were very little resources. The people who were church planting in my denomination, at least, were people who couldn't get other jobs. And so they ended up, their mission agency would sort of fund them for a couple of years. And then it's almost like you do 2 years and then you quit. Matter of fact, when we went to Buffalo, it was something called a mega focus city. It was an old denominational strategy, later became something called strategic focus city. And my recollection is they sent 8 of us and a church planting like supervisor to plant churches in Buffalo. Buffalo in the inner city was the fastest shrinking city in America at the time, middle of the crack epidemic in the late 80s, early 90s. But that's what we felt called to. And others went to, like, you know, Amherst, which is kind of nice, you know. But of the church plant, 10 years later, there was, you know, I think, you know, about half of the church planters were out of the ministry. A few of them were out of their marriages and out of the faith. And one of the church plants, our church plant was still going, but man, it was kind of, I told people later, it was like the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan when they hit the beach. People wow. really just try, and it was really hard. So what happened was people began to say, we need a better way. We need to stop throwing church planters to Omaha Beach and seeing how many make it up the shore. So, you know, so the big shift is that, and this is probably before most people care, but the big shift is we stop as much talking about church planting and start talking about church planters. And that shift takes place. I wrote my PhD dissertation on that shift. And so we created systems and processes. And so now, you know, no church planter should be alone. There's no reason for a church planter not to have the resources. I mean, think of what New Churches has become, right? New Churches used to be a bunch of, I don't know if they had PDFs back then. I think they were just web pages where you would click and read things and cut and paste. And now, you know, we have a whole church planting masterclass that's for free. We have preaching masterclass. We just have countless resources. So I think the biggest shift in church planting is not the change in denominations, though that's big. It's not in the change even in demographics. It's in that from when I started church planting to today, if you will take the time to learn, you can learn the best. I mean, you can listen to podcasts that help you with this. The question often is, though, is church planters are often not the type that will take the learning. They kind of want to do it themselves. But I would say with the learning available today and the community available today, it doesn't feel like the opening scene to Save It, Private Ryan. It actually feels like we can make this happen together. And again, some of that's bad, if I could add that. You know, sometimes church planting, you know, I mentioned like the Exponential Conference is great, right? So, but that can also become like a trade show. So you go down, you walk by all the vendors, and this is how you, you know, just do this, just add water and you got a church. So we can't lose our reliance on the Holy Spirit that I felt very strongly in 1988. But the tools are here, and with the right spiritual and biblically grounded approach, I think church planting has matured in many ways, and I think that's a good thing.
So that's fascinating. So the biggest, I mean, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I feel like one of the things I'm doing with my team at the North American Mission Board with the SIN Network is to want to equip pastors and church leaders with resources to help them be able to persevere in ministry. And obviously we have a lot of that at newchurches.com. We do that in some other places as well. So it's interesting you say that one of the biggest shifts in the last 30 years has been the increase in resources. What about the biggest challenge that has presented itself in the last 30 years? Are the challenges different than they were 30 years ago? Maybe resources helps on one front. What are some, you know, every challenge brings opportunities. Every opportunity winds up bringing other challenges. Like, what are some?
There are flip sides to that, right? So the flip sides to that is that statistically, and we're going to redo this data and share some of this data at the Exponential Conference in 2015. But just on the flip side of that is because church planting. You can like buy all of your equipment in a trailer, pre-made. Hook it to a truck and roll it up and unload. That didn't exist. You know, so you got to forget. I had, when I started our first church and our second church, we had like secondhand youth ministry sound systems that some church in the South gave to us. And that's what we used. And we had to unwire. There was no snake. We had every cord. Anyway. But I think what's happened is when the invisible hand of capitalism is really a thing. So when all of this energy and money went to church planning, businesses arose around church planning. It's so much so that like there's been scholarly books now written on church planting just from an entrepreneurial startup perspective. There's a podcast called the Startup Podcast. Follow like startup restaurants. They did a church planting episode.
A whole season.
Yeah. Right. And I think you were in it. I said no, because like, who are these people? And then I started listening to it and they called back. I said, sure, I'll go on the podcast. So what happened is the invisible hand of capitalism means when there's a need that entrepreneurs or capitalists tend to follow, and then resources form up around that. So what happened is a whole industry, there's a church planning industry, which I said earlier. Now, here's the challenge. You go back to church planning in the 50s, a guy named Larry Lewis wrote a book, and he said, here's how you plant a church. You knock on doors, you tell people about Jesus. Once you get four families, you start having worship, then you go tell more people about Jesus. Then you have eight families, then you have 12 families. Very conversionistic, very evangelistic. Well, now, man, it's just kind of add water and hopefully the Holy Spirit and boom. So what I would say is the ability to plant churches using these tools that I'm thankful for. Don't misunderstand. My name is on them endorsing them. Sometimes companies will say, you know, Ed Stetzer or whatever. So what I would say is we actually saw from our church planning data we did big landmark studies in 2007, I believe, 2000, was it 14 or 12 and then 17? So what we found is church plants were getting larger while their evangelistic numbers were getting smaller. So for me, I think the flashing alarm bells, I really care that women and men would respond by grace and through faith to the good news of the gospel and be born again. So that's why I ran the Billy Graham Center. That's an emphasis I bring here to the Talbot School of Theology. So what I would say is if we plant more and larger churches, but they're not evangelistic and impactful and changing people's lives, I think all we've done is move sheep around. There's a very famous quote from C. Peter Wagner, church planning is the most effective evangelistic methodology under heaven, which is true if it's evangelistic church planning. So that's what I would say. I don't want people, man, I got people mad. You know, one day I was a professor at a seminary once and this person came up and said, we want to plant a church. I said, what kind of church do you want to plant? I want to plant a reformed church so people can actually really see the church done right. I said, well, you're going to reach like people who don't know Jesus? No. I just think I could gather some people and love the preaching and we go deep in the Word of God. And I declined. I was running a denominational funding thing at the time. And I said, that's not really what we do. We plant churches that reach people who don't know Jesus. Oh, all the people got mad at me at that seminary. But here's the reality. Is that I don't want to invest my time and energy in church planning. It just moves people. And it could, you know, maybe it's taking Presbyterians and making them Pentecostals. I don't want to do that. I'm taking Pentecostals and making them Reformed. I don't want to do that. I want to help plant churches that see lives change. And I'm for Pentecostal church planning and Presbyterian church planning, but I don't want church planning that's just moving sheep around. And that's what I think has happened too much in the last decade.
Wow. That's a big challenge. Okay, so we've looked at the past. Let's look at the future of church planting. Just looking ahead down the road based on where we are.
I don't know. Do you know? Did you predict the pandemic? Did you see that coming?
Yeah, but seriously though, you have been doing trends for a long time.
Yeah.
And you know, God upends trends. So and nothing we're saying here is taken away from the sovereignty of God, just in case that Reformed listener is listening, that you were talking about. The guy that wanted to play at the Reformed church.
Yeah. He later became a friend and said, I'm so glad you didn't fund me to plant a church to make, you know, to not reach people for Jesus. So anyway.
Man, that's
but good. The people who were mad at me never became friends, but that's another story.
So looking forward, how can we better train, better equip future church planters to navigate some of the cultural complexities that are the challenges that are out there right now?
Yeah, I mean, some of that is things we already know. Like we're living in the midst of a cultural convulsion. We're going to walk through that. It's going to be difficult and challenging. I don't think that's specifically what you're talking about. You're talking more about, you know, what kind of church planting will we be doing? And what I would say is that, you know, one of the things you have to get used to, you know, I've been at this for, since 88 in church planting, and then I became a missiologist and, you know, oversaw like very, you know, large church planting program called the Nehemiah Project for a while. is that everybody thinks that the way they church, they're planting a church, is the way that the future will be. So, you know, house church people, you hang around house church people, it's just, we got to just abandon the, you know, the established institutional model, go organic. You know, Pentecostals see themselves, you know, I just spoke at the, you know, Amsterdam gathering of the Pentecostal evangelists, and, you know, and I'm super thankful, man, they're going to reach the world for Jesus while we're talking about them. And, but, you know, but that's kind of, you got to be that to do that. And so you kind of get, you know, used to sort of a series of claims that people are the future. And I would just say the future doesn't look like a thing. It looks like a lot of things. I think that people who thought that the day of large church planting was dead, you know, haven't been doing ARC gathering lately. They're doing lots of big launch church planting. People who thought that, you know, that church planting in gentrified settings wouldn't last, you know, they need to come hang around some networks that are doing that. I just spoke at Plant Fort Worth, and they're doing some really neat stuff in some gentrified setting. People have thought church planting among the African-American community was, you know, when they read Jose Francis and others. So what I would say is, I think you're going to have people planting missional incarnational communities that maybe have coffee shops and they turn them into churches and they go back and forth and they're doing business as mission. It's going to be a beautiful God ordained thing. And I think there are going to be people launching with 200 people in their first service to keep 100 and go from there. I think some of the difference is, though, is that in all of these places, we're becoming a more secular environment. Year by year, about 1% less people identify as Christian. And as that happens, one of the things that church planting, at least from the 80s forward, was based on is that there's a significant number of maybe unchurched seekers, if you want to use 80s language, that if there was a new cool church in town that was not like their mama's church, they might go and check out. And I would say that, first of all, by the time that went by 10 years, everyone who would be open to getting that cool mailer is already picked somewhere. And so, but today I would say that you're not drawing on this wave of like boomers coming back to church or Gen Xers reconsidering this. So I would say we're going to see an advance of things like the role of apologetics and persuasion. We're going to see more, I hope, more evangelism, not less. I think in too many cases, it's actually been less evangelism because it's harder. The apologetics thing is really key too. I think one of the reasons that I came to Talbot is, you know, we have the largest apologetics program in the world, I think. And, you know, and I just think that that's going to be a part of it. When you're going to reach secular people who are starting in a different place, it's not, hey, we got a cool church, come see our cool church. Though I will tell you, I think it's a certain irony that that in the 90s actually was pretty effective. So I think that the growing secularization and secularism means that you're going to have lots of different ways. You're going to take all kinds of churches to reach all kinds of people. It's going to be harder. One of the reasons why for me, when I tell church planting stories, if I tell church planting stories, the last church I planted, I left 8 years ago in Nashville, you know, Grace Church there in Hendersonville. And since that time, you know, they got a building that's so cool. Anyway, used to be a wedding venue that was a horse barn. Only in Nashville do people do stuff like this. But, you know, my stories are 10 years old, and that's an eternity now in church planting time. So, and I also think that size comparisons, it's just church plants are going to be often smaller, I hope more evangelistic, more diverse in their methodology, and I hope driven by mission. But I don't know that's always the case. I try to look to, you know, I teach there at Wycliffe at Oxford, and you'll be there with me. You know, I try to listen to church planters over in the UK to see in some ways what the future is here. And I would say the future is good. Jesus is at work in the future, and we're going to plant churches with him there. But I don't know that we can rely on some of the same assumptions about openness that we did in the past.
Any, you know, one of the things I want to make sure that listeners are listening to this, we're going to talk about some of the changes coming to this podcast here in the future. One of those changes, I'll go ahead and say it now in case people haven't figured it out, is that you will no longer be a regular host of the New Churches podcast. It doesn't mean that we're not going to have you back on. And
we can be friends. We can be friends, but yes. Right. Yeah.
You're not going to be one of the hosts. And so, you know, as you think about this, kind of taking this New Churches podcast from where it's been to where it is today, us moving in a slightly different direction moving forward that we'll talk about here in just a little bit. You know, what's your heart, your burden for church planters or potential church planters that are listening to this now as you look to the future?
When I was planning my first church, it was 88, and I came back and I needed to cast vision for the church plant. I mean, part of what I need to do is I got turned down by my denomination to be a church planter. I'd asked for funding. I got turned down as being a missionary. But I still felt God calling and went up there and planted a church, something called Mission Service Corps, kind of like a volunteer part of the mission force. And I went back to try to raise some funds. I think I was in Georgia, and I got some pictures. Now, again, I'm very much willing to, I'm very comfortable embracing that I'm 57 years old. So I went back, and before you were around, they used to have slides, and these slides would kind of go in a, you know, put a little circular slide projector, you go ching, 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 ching. So anyway, I got these slides from Buffalo, and I came back and I showed this slideshow everywhere I went. I had a song. And not, I didn't sing the song, but I played the song. That's what you do. You'd sort of, like today, people create a video, they play it, you see it all over YouTube. And the song was something that still animates my church planning journey that was released in 1984. Here's what the song that would play while people would show slides of Buffalo, particularly from this place at Prospect Avenue, where really I took the pictures and I really wanted to just see people come to Jesus. And it goes like this. It says, every day, I'm not going to sing it. Every day they pass me by, I can see it in their eyes, empty people filled with care, headed who knows where. And it goes on, and you probably recognize the song by now, only through private pain, living fear to fear, laughter hides their silent cries, only Jesus hears. And then the song goes, people need the Lord, people need the Lord.
Steve Green right there. Isn't that Steve Green? Yeah.
Steve Green, 1984. And people need the Lord. When will they realize people need the Lord? Now, the song is a little interesting because it's actually written to Christians because the end of the chorus is, it says, people need the Lord, people need the Lord. When will we realize people need the Lord? And I would say that decades later, that the end of that song, that end of that chorus, when will they realize people need the Lord? So as I'm sort of handing this over and off to Trevin, you and your team, you've got a multi-denominational listening audience. You've got church planners and what I call church planning adjacent people. It's bizarre to me how big this audience has grown. It's the largest church planning podcast in the world, but I run to people all the time who are all listening for different reasons who maybe are church planning adjacent. But my friend, people need the Lord. And so let's make sure that as you share with the folks where the podcast is going, just you're going to have a hint of that. As you share with the folks, for me, I get up every morning wanting to see women and men trust and follow Jesus. And it made a slideshow from the city of Buffalo in the late 80s and still today in 2024 on Snapchat, that message still remains. People need the Lord. So where are we going with the podcast, Trevin?
Amen. Well, that's a great word to close on. So we're going to take a little bit of a hiatus. We are revamping things, recalibrating some things. We want to have a video component to this podcast in the future, which is not just going to be video of, you know, different voices, different people on the screen and Zoom. One of the things we're trying to do with the Send Network is to be a place that hosts gatherings of different people who have experience in church planting or are currently in the midst of church planting, to bring them together in conversation, two or three people at a time, where we can, you know, over several days, really get into some thematic. Part of this is going to be thematic as we look to the future of church planting, the scriptures, different elements of church planting, different aspects of what makes a church planter successful in biblical terms, faithful, and what that will mean. So we'll have a variety of guests. You'll hear more from some of the other co-hosts already of the podcast, people like Tony Morita and Vance Pittman and others. But we're going to take a hiatus. Then we're going to come back with a little bit of a retooled podcast that will be in more of a seasonal format rather than the way that we've been doing it in the past. And I don't want to go into too much more detail there because we're still hammering out some of the details, exactly who will be on some of these episodes, what it will look like. But I think as you know, the online world is changing, as podcasting is changing, this is going to be a nice sort of new churches. I would say 2.0, but we've had multiple.
It's been like 6.0.
Yeah, 6.0, New Churches Podcast 6.0.
It's like 833 episodes. People don't realize we've had co-hosts, like people remember Todd Atkins. We've had some great journey and great people that are here. But anyway.
It's true. And Ed, I know I am speaking for a lot of people who've been listening to this podcast, and for people that have worked with you, have listened to your voice on this. we have all sorts of appreciation and gratitude that we'd want to convey to you for your investment in the podcast, in the planters who have listened, and we pray God's blessing on you just as you've blessed other people.
Thank you. And I would say, you know, you've been on, I'll still have the Stetzer Church Leaders Podcast. We still do that over at the, we have the Church Leaders Podcast Network we've launched as well with, you know, people like Derwin Gray and Rob Hoskins and others. But yeah, I just think that, it's probably a good time for some other voices closer to the field. I'll be a guest, but closer to the field to host, and really enjoyed the journey together. So appreciate you, Trev. It feels like when I left Lifeway, left Gospel Project in your hands, and now I'm leaving the podcast in your hands. So this is kind of a pattern that we have.
Yeah, well, Ed, it's an honor to work with you. And for those of you listening, we're thankful that you're listening. We hope you will continue to visit newchurches.com. Take advantage of all of the free resources there. I don't know that we reiterate that enough, that they are free resources there that represent an investment that goes back a long time now, that Ed began and that others have continued to steward that legacy. So we encourage you to go to newchurches.com and to keep listening for the next episode after a hiatus of the New Churches Podcast.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.